Hello, who's here?
Hey, buddy. I just saw Donna's email about am I limited to 1 hour. In fact, I hate to say this, but I may be limited to half an hour.
You kidding me?
I'm sorry to do this, but I have literally never been busier in my life than I am right now, and I am absolutely swamped at the moment. Because it turns out, in the middle of a crisis, everyone's a conspiracy theorist. Who knew?
Yeah. Well, are any other guys on yet? Yeah, it's a minute after. They're being a slacker. They're going to miss out. Life sucks because I get to say, well, that's what you get, Frank, for being late. Okay.
Hey, guys.
We got Tim. James only got half hour now, so you guys, you'll miss out.
Well, I figured Frank's going to be at least 8 minutes late anyways.
We can get the party started.
Yeah, I just got off the Conspiracy Farm podcast with Sam. So
yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I've never heard their stuff before and had no idea that Pat Milicic was one of their co-hosts. So I was like, oh wow,
cool stuff.
Yeah, well, I got this for Dr. Frank. I've got it came in the mail today. Came in the mail today. The Keep America Great Money Gun. I can put with little Trump Ernie. Came in the mail today.
Wait till we do it like John does.
And I got over 100 little Trump little dogs.
All right. Let's start.
Don't shoot your wad at once, though. So you got to hold on to it. Yeah. Come on, Frank.
Too late.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
And a few. Ton of fear people today. Here we go. Oh, and as usual, Frank made it after the music started. All right, so we got you there, Frank.
Yep, I'm here.
There he is. All right, this is what's going on.
His video's not on. Do you know that, Frank?
We're just lucky that we got his name up here. Anyway, so this is what we have. We're going to go ahead and have James Corbett is going to talk with Tim Pachote, the Liberty Advisor, Dr. Frank Tamburi, the Trump Report, and me, Ernest Hancock. But James is being a busy individual, and kind of.
Oh, you're talking.
I'm sorry.
I'm answering emails while you're talking.
Well, stop!
I'm paying attention.
I'm busy. Everybody's a conspiracist when the bottom drops out. So we're going to go ahead, and I'm going to let you guys take up the time because he may only have a half hour, but then Tim and Frank and I can go on and see if we can drag out as much time as we can from James Corbett. CorbettReport.com. Now, I'm going to turn it over to you guys of asking James anything you want, or James can ask us, but you're busy now because of what, James?
Because there's about 8 million things happening in the world right now, and it's my job to be on top of all of them. And although that's always been an impossible task, it's an impossible task at several orders of magnitude larger at the moment. So now that we have Tim on, let's get some of the financial talk going, because that's one of the ways in which the world has changed forever. And I don't even know where to begin.
I do. I got a question. Tim.
I already know what it is.
This talking about that the Federal Reserve is taking over from the Fed. There's some kind of federal government taken in with the Fed. You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, explain that to me.
So a lot of people, I guess, like in the broader Q type movement or in the conspiracy world, a lot of them are under the impression that Trump has done some sort of end run around the Fed and has somehow nationalized the Fed and taken it over. I do not think that is the case at all. I think we're being misled, just like, it's typically what happens. So what is going on right now, and I don't have the article in front of me, but there was verbiage in there that says that the Treasury will be in a first loss position. So what does that mean? It means that the banks, if there's money to be made, the Federal Reserve, they get to make the money on the way up, and the people, aka the Treasury, are the ones who get screwed on the way down. So I actually had a question that I was listening to the Peter Schiff show. This is right around the time of Brexit. And he's like, hey, it's a pretty boring day, except for this one question that snuck through and got asked to Janet Yellen. Well, wouldn't you know it, was my question that I asked one of my congressmen, because I'm here in Phoenix, there's like six of them or something. So I asked Schweikert this super ball buster question about what happens during a time frame where, because let me back it up. So this is super complicated. So the Federal Reserve keeps 6% of all the profit. They spin it as they give back 94% of all the profit. So 6% of all the interest of all the debt they get to keep as profit, and then they give back 94% to the Treasury. Now, I asked a question. I go, well, currently at the time, I mean, I don't know, they were paying like, this is before the rates were going up, so it was like around 0.25%. I'm like, so what happens when you are, let's say you're collecting, let's say 2% in interest from the banks, you know, holding onto the bonds, you're paying out 0.25%. But let's say rates actually do rise like you've been suggesting and like you've been BSing us for the past decade. Let's say rates are at, let's say, 3 or 4%. Then what happens then? Then you're going to pay out 4 when you're only collecting 2, and you're going to be losing 2%. So I'm like, are you going to send the Treasury a bill? And she actually said that my scenario was mathematically impossible. I mean, an alien attack tomorrow is possible. And yet she's saying that. And so now they have the verbiage saying first loss position. So no, they didn't nationalize the Fed. What they did is they screwed us by, we're the ones, at least the slaves over here in America, we're the ones who are going to get stuck with the bill while the Federal Reserve gets to keep all the profits on the way up. Just like it's been going on from time and time again. So even G. Everett Griffin's getting wrapped up into this. Tons of people getting wrapped up into this. Like, oh, look, Trump has finally made the move, and this is it. I was just on the Conspiracy Farm podcast, and Sam and those guys were hitting me up with this question as well. And, yeah, a lot of people right now, that's the main thing they're asking me. Like, he must be so happy right now that Trump is going and, you know, taking things over, and he's sticking it to the Fed. He's not sticking it to the Fed. He's telling Jerome Powell, attaboy, great job. So proud of you. And he's doing he's gotten through stuff that we would only, like in my worst nightmare, never thought that the first time right out the gates we'd have a $6 trillion program. So I bought a money gun, like it just came in the mail. I'm not really sure even how to use it. So maybe my money gun is broke. But it's a Trump Make America Great Again money gun. So you need to make sure you don't blow all your wad at once. And that's what they've done. They've blown their wad. They've printed all this money. They've reduced the reserve requirement down to zero. Banks don't even need to hold on to your money anymore. And we're just a banana republic without the bananas. So.
At least they had bananas. All right, Dr. Frank, defend, man. You know, Frank, Trump's in the fifth dimensional chess of something. All right, explain it to us. Go, Frank.
If Trump, I will give you the signed Make America Great Again hat if Trump ends up getting rid of the Federal Reserve. That's my word to you. I'll give you the signed hat that I bought before the election.
All right, Frank, go.
Well, I was sitting there applauding on my end. That was fantastic, Tim. I loved it.
Thank you.
I'm like, I want to get one of those Trump bunny guns, actually. I'm not in the position to defend that at this point. I'm just not. I there's too much uncertainty. I'll wait to hear what he really does. You know, my support of the president has been more about unifying the cult. I can hear your gun. Is more about the culture, which might seem kind of a pedantic and simplistic, but it's not. I think it's what this whole thing is about, going to Ernie's issue that we argued over the other day about what is going to be, who's going to be left and what culture is going to wind up being dominant in order to resuscitate what's left of this country or fight to get back the rights that we, that we'll be losing. And it's, I'm sure we will be losing them. The question is, how many will we get back and how many will be given back? How many will be reclaimed, and how many will be fought for, right? So that's the larger issue. I do have, I don't want to turn it into you and I about Trump right now, because we have James on the phone, and that's really what we want to focus on. So let's go back to James, though. I mean, what's your take on that, and especially the international market? And by the way, James, if you're still there, Hajimaste, you probably don't know much about me because you don't even see my picture, but I graduated from Kansai Gai Daigaku out there back in the day. Spent quite a bit of time in Japan for a year or so. I lived at a Buddhist monastery for some time. I kind of did that all back in the early 90s before sushi restaurants were popular here in America and manga. I'll just leave it that way. So I'm always very interested to talk with you at some point. Granted, I didn't realize the first time we would be chatting is under these Walking Dead sort of circumstances. But with that said, and I'm sure whatever comments you have with Tim, I'd love to hear. But I would like to hear how Japan is handling this. I argued with Ernie over the phone, over the interview last time, about the three options that Trump or any country has to try to deal with this. And I used the three different, the two extremes. And the one extreme, of course, is to allow the virus to go rampant and basically allow it to save the economy rather than lives. And maybe that's the best way to go about it, because if the economy doesn't die, then you don't lose as many liberties. And at the end of the day, maybe that's the way to play it, is more about the liberties and freedoms and save the economy. Whereas in Asia, and again, I don't want to oversimplify it, but many Asian countries, Japan being one of them, and you can correct me if I'm wrong because you're there. I will defer all of my opinions to you when it comes to this topic for obvious reasons. But I'll tell you what, it sounds like Asian countries have put the kibosh on it. They decided to go with saving lives versus the economy as much. Basically, they will deal with the economy later. I think much of it is their culture. They have a unified culture. And that's something Ernie and I fight over all the time, because if you haven't lived overseas, let alone a country like Japan that has a monolithic culture, that it's all about being Japanese, Nihongo, the Nihonjin. If you're not Japanese in culture and think Japanese, and the way they're taught in school, the way they think Japanese, it's hard for Americans to understand someone like Ernie, who everything is independent and the individual. And so I can see the Japanese unifying as a whole in order to take this out, but they're sacrificing the entire economy to do so. So those are the two extremes. I think Donald Trump, since we have a divided country, divided culture for a whole bunch of reasons that goes beyond this conversation, I think being the pragmatist he is, he's not an ideologue, he's a pragmatist. And therefore, he's going to try to find some way in the middle to hit the most points and check boxes. Now, you could argue that you try to make everyone happy, then no one's happy, and there's that. But he's probably going to find somewhere in between those two extremes. But anyway, that's kind of the big picture of what Arnie and I discussed for a long time the other day. But since you're on the phone, I would love to hear what you're seeing on the ground there in Japan. How are the people looking at this? Do they think that's a good avenue to go? Do they think they should maybe do the opposite and save the economy over the people? All of that. So I'd love to hear your comments on that, James. Thanks for hearing that.
What an intro. All right. First, Tim, I think you've got the wrong mic on, because it sounded like you had your room or your computer mic on instead of your actual mic. Secondly, Frank, hajimemashite, Frank Sensei, yoroshiku onegaishimasu. Yes, I can give you, thirdly, the Japanese perspective on this, which is, I think, different than almost any other country, because as I've said before, every authoritarian structure in the world has its incentive in pushing this crisis as hard, as far as they can go in order to take as big of a power grab as possible. But the Japanese actually had their bread buttered on the other side of this issue, because until about a week ago, they were pretending that the Tokyo 2020 Olympics were going to go ahead as planned with international visitors and all of that, when reality met the Japanese government and they eventually had to concede that, yes, the Olympics are going to be postponed. I did predict at that time, and I'm glad it's on the record on video, I said, as soon as they postpone or cancel the Olympics, it's going to be like everywhere else. They're going to go into lockdown mode. And wouldn't you know it, just an amazing coincidence. Although Japan had everything under control, there's nothing spreading here, it's okay, it's all fine, until literally the day that they announced the postponement of the Olympics, suddenly, wow, there seems to be a hotspot developing in Tokyo, and look at all these damn plebs walking around with this virus, and now suddenly they're ramping it up, and I guarantee you within a week or two, they're going to go into lockdowns. It's just a question of time.
You know, my thing was the discussion between Frank and I, it went like this. I am of the opinion that when you have a crashed or a struggling economy, that equals death. death, death, death. The poorer you are, the fewer options you have, the more death you got. So I don't see that saving the economy is like you're not saving lives. That was the argument.
Well, I mean, thank you, James, for letting me know, pointing out I had the wrong mic turned on. It was a Blue Yeti mic, so still okay, but thank you. But one of the things Frank was asking, you know, are we the Japanese response? Well, the Federal Reserve's response is a lot like the Japanese response, where the Bank of Japan owns about 87% of all the new issuances of the ETF market. Dr. Frank also laid out three different choices. Well, Donald Trump and the Federal Reserve and the Treasury have three different choices. They can probably say, and I've made this point, you know, a few times in Ernie's show, they could save, you know, probably two out of three things. They could save either the dollar, the stock market, or the bond market. Then you'd have to then ask, well, who are they saving it for? Well, the bond market, they're saving it for all the debtors. And so what they're doing is they're making the interest payments be as low as possible, potentially even negative, to bail out all the debtors, which then there's, you know, everything you do over here then affects something over there. So the over there is, you know, all the pensioners, everyone that's been saving money, all the senior citizens who are trying to, you know, get by, having 40% of their money in fixed income investments. So, you know, that one, you know, they're trying to save it that way. The stock market, obviously, they're trying to save it that way. How are they trying to save that? By saving, by bringing the bond yields down lower, by bringing the borrowing costs down lower, is how they're trying to, quote unquote, save the stock market. And so what they're going to end up doing is they're going to end up probably hyperinflating the stock market eventually on a long enough time horizon, not financial advice. And then what they'll probably also end up doing is by doing that, they're going to kill the dollar. So by killing the dollar, that will then lead to the stock market on a long enough time horizon, probably going hyperbolic. It's just, you know, if you're 65 years old, you might not have, you know, 5-10 years. I mean, I don't know what the timeline is.
Well, nobody even then, it doesn't matter. A 20,000 point Dow now equals what 20 years ago? I mean, and the thing about the Dow is, I find out as I study this over the years, is that it changes who the, you know, the top 30, 60, what is the Dow? 60, 30? I think it's only 30, right?
30, and the S&P 500 is a much better indicator of the true economy of...
Actually, yeah, so what? Never hear about it. It's all about the Dow, and then it's always in the top 30 companies now is not even the same freaking... Almost all of them are different, you know, from 10, 20 years ago. The dollar is now, you know, a fraction of what it was worth when, you know, 9/11, and it's what? 20, 30% of the value of the dollar. I mean, you know, we're not comparing apples and apples. All of this is a big, giant lie. It's just a lie. Lie.
Well, what I want to show, and I'll be real quickly here. So a better gauge of the true U.S. economy is going to be what, you know, what small cap companies are doing, what mid cap companies are doing, not what the big globalist Dow S&P 500 type companies are doing. So take a look at the Morningstar index over here for small cap companies. Trailing five-year return is averaging negative 2.63%. So you're going, even into Obama era, if you invested money, you would have been negative. Russell 2000, same deal, much more indicative of what the true health of the economy is. Went down 13% in 2018, which means you need to go up about 26 to get back to even. So they are down. Look over here, trying to find this now. Five-year average negative 2.7%. Then we're looking at global stock market index over here. I believe it's Fidelity. Again, not financial advice in case the SEC ends up listening to this. And over here, negative 0.65%. You guys are laughing over here, but they would nail me on something like this if I didn't say that. So negative. So you're looking at global. The only one they've been gaming the whole time is S&P 500, and because that's where the big globalist companies get to, you know, borrow money next to nothing, use the borrowed money, buy back their own stock, all sorts of financial engineering. And, oh, by the way, sorry, we don't have a rainy day fund over here because we paid all of our executives.
Don't need one. They get bailed out.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, what the heck? You know, when you look from over there, James, and you're going, didn't Japan go through this? Aren't they still going through this? They got zombie everything. You know, it's just a walking dead economy with walking dead banks and walking dead companies. At some point, you know, the music stops. I mean, what are you looking for?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of analogies that people have made of the Japanese bubble and the bubble burst that happened in the late 80s, early 90s, which was a central bank fueled phenomenon that was burst. And the Japanese government would not let the banks die. So they have been zombie banks for decades. And they've been trying to essentially inflate the economy out to actually expand to fit the size of the bubble that they had blown and popped, which has led to a couple of decades, the lost decades of absolute inability to get any sort of inflation going. It has been a deflationary environment. And that's what a lot of people have been saying, that, you know, it looks like that's the way the U.S. is going to head in the future. But that was before the virus that changed everything. And I want to put a different perspective on this because we've heard that there are, well, what's your options when this virus is spreading? You can either kill the people or kill the economy. And those are your options, which I think is garbage baloney. Because, I mean, Ernie, as you point out, I mean, if you kill the economy, you are killing people. It's just a different way of doing it. But also, this is not the Black Death. This is not some sort of, it's going to kill untold numbers of people. All of the models and projections of millions dead have been documentably proven wrong. And even the people putting forward those projections, upon which most of the health authorities in the world are basing their decisions, have come out and retracted their own study and said, oops, we were off by a factor of 10. But don't worry, the lockdowns are still necessary. This is an authoritarian power grab. It is not about saving lives. And we have to deal with the principle of what is being argued here, because Dr. Frank, you are a doctor. You know that a bad flu pandemic season, for example, 2018, I believe it was, 60,000 plus people in the U.S. died that season. There were 4,000 people a week dying from the flu. At that time, that was barely a footnote in the news. But if we were concentrating on the flu deaths at that time in the way that we're concentrating on coronavirus deaths, the exact same arguments could be made. If you let people out of their house and interacting with each other, someone will catch the flu and they will die as a result of this. There's 4,000 people a week dying. Yes, absolutely. Human contact will cause contagions to spread and people will die. But that has never, in the course of human history, been an excuse for locking down the entire economy. It is nonsense. If this was truly the Black Death and everyone who comes in contact is going to die, billions around the globe are going to die, I could understand the type of freakout. But what we have seen so far does not justify this freakout in any way. This is a planned event that is used to mask the derailing, not the derailing of an economy, the popping of a bubble that was going to pop, that was actually already popping, as we know from the repo market freakout that happened in September, where they started QE4, and the Federal Reserve balance sheet started going up after they'd been trying to pare it down a little bit. It got to $4.5 trillion on the Fed's books in 2015. Then they started paring it down a little bit. But then the repo markets go insane and starts moving up, and now it's going up by $1 trillion in the space of a week or whatever. It's just absolute insanity. That is what this is ultimately about. Coronavirus freakout is about a virus in the exact same way 9/11 was about real estate in New York. It is not about that. It is about the bigger picture of what's happening here. And it's a false dichotomy to say you can either save the economy or you can lock down everyone and save lives. That is totally a false dichotomy. It's being used to distract us from the real issues here, which is an authoritarian power grab, the likes of which the world has never seen before.
You know, I want to put this up before we get the response from Frank. There is this, I've been having Dr. Judy on for, it's going on 5 years or so, and she predicted all of this stuff. And her new book coming out, Plague of Corruption, her first book, Plague, and her and Kent Heckenlively wrote this, and they co-authored the second book, Plague of Corruption. And in there, she details Anthony Fauci, the head of the NIH of infectious whatever guy up there with Trump all the time. And it seems to me the MO of Trump is take guys like this, deep state, whatever, put them front and center, give them the podium, limelight, and looky here, and you're fired. Or everybody just comes to the conclusion that they're part of the problem. And I'm wondering, you know, it's just, it's becoming obvious. And there's so many issues involved here. Trump is, I need to know what he thinks he's doing. Is he making nice or nuzzling up with the Federal Reserve and the NIH and as part of a game, or is they got him actually scared, or what do you think's going on, Frank? You know, help us out trying to decipher this.
Wow. All right. So let me just point out that two big picture things. First off, not that I know all, but I happen to be in two different fields that I'm a contrarian in, both in medicine, being a cash-only naturopathic doctor that has a practice very unique outside the system, so I would never be part of Obamacare. I saw that coming back in the 90s, and that's a whole other story, but I was seeing how medicine was going. But as a doctor, I see the virus component. I see the medical side to this. I saw this tidal wave from the virus perspective early on. And I'm just saying this because on Ernie's show back in January, remember, we were talking about this in January, I started bringing up on the show. And one of the questions that Ernie asked me was, well, wait a minute, how come you're all concerned about this? You know, what about SARS? What about MERS? Were you worried about that? Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, there was whatever I was involved with the groups back then. I was laughing off SARS. I thought it was just a joke, another power grab, or at least an excuse when Obama tried to push it. Not at all. And no, it's not because Donald Trump's president now, I believe it. That's not it at all. Ernie asked me on the air, why was I changing my mind? Why was I concerned with this one as a doctor? And it was the R-naught factor. And I remember on your show, Ernie, I went, I spent the time, I started to explain an R-naught of 1.28 with the standard flu, SARS, which is 2.0. And the Chinese doctors that were getting their message through, not through medical sites, because they were getting shut down. They were speaking through economic sites. Matter of fact, one of the sites I first heard it through was Stefan Molyneux back in like January or something. And he was getting doctors because doctors that listened to his show were using his site. And somehow, I guess the Chinese authorities weren't locking them down because they didn't think of it as a medical site. So I remember that. And then I started looking at other sites where doctors and from China and then a few other countries were starting to talk about this. And they started projecting or discussing it could have an R-naught factor around 4.0. And they're all coming out with the same conclusion. And there was a lot of confusion about, you know, whether it was...
Well, for the audience, R-naught factor is how contagious it is, how many people that get... Well, please.
So I'll explain real quickly then. It's basically how one infected person, how many people can one infected person infect in one cycle of the virus. Now, a cycle could be one season, or it could be multiple times in one season, depending how much it mutates. So regardless how it does it, that's why we say one cycle. So therefore, what they normally do is they do it in 10 and 20 cycles as kind of like benchmarks. So to keep it simple, my usual spiel with this is that the average flu at 1.28 could infect, I think it's like 20,000, it might be 30,000 people in 20 cycles. SARS at like 2.0 would infect a couple hundred million, okay? And with this, with a 4.0 or more, you're looking at, I think the one you number crunch, because it's like compound interest, it came out to like 360 billion with a Carl Sagan B on there. And so that was why the concern was so high. And once I saw that, it had nothing to do with who made it. Was it government planned?
But
was
is that number holding up?
Right. Well, but I'm just explaining to you why the concern was there amongst doctors. And then you start to see the doctors from different hospitals around the world, all also through the medical sites, are having the same story. They were laughing this off, not because they're Freedom Phoenix individuals who just don't trust the man. These are doctors going, oh yeah, the flu, we see this every year. Why are we having in services? I want to get home. Why do we have a mandatory in service? It was that attitude that these doctors and nurses were having. They were not taking this seriously either for a whole different reason. And every single one of these hospitals and groups, these people have been talking to other doctors saying, don't do what we did. Take this seriously. We thought it was a joke. And wait until it comes into your neck of the woods and hits your hospital. And now you've got doctors and nurses that don't want to be there. They have kids at home. They're sitting there. They can't even have masks. They're seeing this different pink sputum coming out. That the systems are falling apart from people that are on the front line.
You know, that's so, one so thing that I go to. Tim, when you're talking to Luke Radowski and he's, you know, really into this thing, he's like, you know, here it comes. And any contrary to that, he doesn't like it. And I'm going, you know, he's Mr. 9/11. I don't believe anything the government says anyway. And I'm like, get your ass down to a hospital. You know, where's his ambush reporting of walking in the emergency room of let me see? I'm not seeing it. I don't give a crap what numbers they're giving out. I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, let me invite him on here right now, maybe. So
hang on, bring him in. Well, let me just finish that because I want
to. Yeah, we can replace James with him.
Well, you asked me about the R-naught. So what I'm getting to is my doctor side of me as a libertarian was that R-naught back in January before anyone was taking it serious in this country. I mean, no one was talking about in this country, but I was on your show, Ernie, and I'm saying it because you and I, you know, it's recorded. I said, this bothers me. Then I started researching. I found the site that I've always promoted. I think it's a great site. Peaceful Prosperity. Peak of Prosperity. Yeah. He does a fantastic job every day giving the numbers and following it. And that gentleman, I forget his name. I apologize. He's done so much work. But he's a Ron Paul guy. I mean, the guy's a Ron Paul guy. He's not some guy that's just part of the establishment of CNN. he's a Ron Paul guy who also is a doctor who understands these numbers, and he's going, whoa, whoa, whoa. And that's another reason I gave credibility, because he's someone I understand.
Okay, I understand that you see these numbers, but are they holding up?
First of all, the problem is, how do you get these numbers? China all of a sudden cut off their numbers, and you saw a flat line. They're like, nothing to see here, no problem, until they're shipping.
I see numbers. Everybody's going Italy, 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 and you scratch the surface, and they're all BS. You know, all right, well, James, let James go before he has to go.
Just go to New York. I mean, sister works.
Luke is in New York. Get your ass down to the hospital. What are you believing about these numbers, James? What's up?
People can look at my work that I did, and I just put one up about the Italian mortality rate and how it's completely nonsense, the numbers that they're reporting. The numbers are real. It's just the way that they're reporting them is completely misleading. The question of the testing, how the testing is being done, the fact that tests that were being shipped to the UK to test millions of citizens, turns out we're already contaminated with COVID-19. So you better believe everyone was going to come out positive on those tests. I don't trust the numbers that are coming out on this one way or the other. But I hope people understand my argument is not, it's just the flu, bro. That is not the argument that I was making. The argument that I'm making is that the principle of what is being argued right now has always been true. You could catch a disease and then you might be fine, but you'll spread it to someone else who is immune compromised or whatever and will die. It is very likely you have in your life spread a disease that caused someone else to die. That has never before in human history been a reason to lock down the economy, lock people in their homes, stop all economic productivity, and ultimately bring the entire system crashing down to its knees. Never before has that been a valid excuse for doing that. If we accept the principle that it is valid to do that, and maybe we should. Maybe it's true. Maybe this is some sort of completely game-changing disease that we have to change the entire rules of human society and reorder entire civilization around it. But I at least want to bring that out in front and want people to say it to my face, that they want me locked up in my house and do not want me to interact with other people because I might catch something that might spread to someone else who might be immune compromised, who might die as a result of it.
James,
that is the way we have to organize human society.
I'm waiting for Ernie to say, say it!
Wait. So James, I wanted to say, I agree with James. I don't want it all of a sudden be plugged because Ernie wants me to respond because I'm the doctor. I'm supposed to just take that side. As a doctor, I see it the way I just explained it. On the other hand, though, like I was saying, my doctor friends understand that component, but they don't understand the economy or the freedom issue. My libertarian friends, they understand the economy, and I appreciate you saying that, James. We understood the stinking repo market from the last couple of years. We knew that we're in a death spiral of the economy, much bigger than anyone understands. We also understand that this coronavirus, whether it's fake or made up or it was planned on purpose, which the timing certainly is beyond circumstantial, right? And pretty, pretty suspicious, but just put that aside for a minute. The fact that we know the economy was already on its death nails, and yet the system, Donald Trump himself, history, and I certainly hope history gets this right eventually, they're going to spell this out, that the economy was humming along and that fiat money works just fine until this biggest plague comes out of the blue, and it was the plague or this coronavirus that sank it. And that is absolutely 1,000,000,000% wrong, or trillion, how many trillions we got so far, wrong. And that's the part that is infuriating, because because that's why it's so suspicious for people on our side, meaning the libertarian side, because we knew it was already dying, and then this shows up, and it seems way too coincidental. So I understand. So it's
you
like
give
them
a precedent. You give them a reason and excuse, and they will use it forever and always, forever in the future. Whenever they need this kind of draconian.
I just want to make the plus point before I go, because you're exactly right. This is the new paradigm that they're going to push, and everything is going to be organized around this right now. They're already talking about apps that you're going to have to carry around on your phone that will track where you're going so that they can see to see your contacts to make sure that if you come in contact with someone who's contagious with the latest disease, whatever they release from the biolab next, that you'll be alerted and that you can be quarantined and isolated. There's going to be internal passports and checkpoints. There's going to be digital certificates for your mandatory vaccines. There's going to be UBI that's going to be injected directly into your account from your digital dollar wallet in your Federal Reserve member bank that, oh, by the way, might come with certain strings attached.
Yeah, like I totally agree.
Vaccine. This is it. I have been warning about essentially the New World Order, whatever you want to call it, for the last 13 years at the Corbett Report. This is the vehicle through which they're going to push every one of those agenda items. It has nothing to do with whoever's president of the Titanic as it's going down. It has everything to do with the long-term agenda that's been in place for generations to bring the, us to the point of total global control. This is it. It is happening now. Wake up to this reality. Let's address the paradigm that's coming in right now, because it is truly the game for all the marbles. And the technological tyranny that's going to be brought in as a result of this is...
I just want you to see what Frank looks like, because you haven't seen him. That he wore the mask, you know, and gloves at the party, you know, a week ago Saturday. You know,
I know, it was fun. I was scaring everybody. Hey, James, I have one last question for you. So just I know probably that no one has the answer yet, but just who do you think's behind this? If you had to guess right now, who is or who are the puppet masters at this point?
Government's the answer. What's the question? No, sorry.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I am not. I'm clearly not a doctor, not a scientist, not a medical researcher. It seems likely to me that it is some sort of biologically manipulated thing. The only question would be: was it let out by accident? Was it released on purpose? Are there multiple versions of this, multiple strains? Was this circulating in the U.S. before it was circulating in China? Why did they slow down Fort Detrick? Why was there that rash of pneumonia-related illnesses that people were coming out, clusters of vaping-related pneumonia that they were reporting in the time frame that lines up with what's happening right now? There are lots of questions about this. I think it is very likely that this was biologically manipulated in some way. I don't know whether it was released as a bioweapon or what have you. That's all speculation. And again, like 9/11, we can talk about the way those buildings went down, and we can talk about the pyrotechnics of the day itself, but miss the bigger picture of the fact it was an organized event that they clearly pushed an agenda on the back of. And this is something that they're going to push an agenda on the back of. So I don't know the answer to that, obviously, but I lean towards the idea that this is a biological weapon.
I would agree. I would agree. Of course, the bigger question, like I was hinting at, is, and we don't know, but who ultimately would be the puppet masters deciding to? Because the timing is just, you know, we have the nationalist populist
who got all the
money over the world.
They them knows.
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, just as a starting point for that, I would look at the people who were involved in Event 201 specifically, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Center for Health Security, the CDC. I mean, these are at least starting points for that investigation.
Cui bono.
Look at
the Japanese
four different biological terror event drills in the past decade and a half, no, two decades, one of which was Dark Winter, which was held in 2001. That was a simulation of a smallpox attack by bioterrorists that would, in the simulation where they had the fake news broadcasts and everything, the simulation blamed it on Iraq, having fed this to terrorists in Afghanistan. And then a few months later, you, of course, have the anthrax attacks that they tried to blame on Iraq, and they linked in the public imagination to Iraq.
Oh.
We now know it had nothing to do with that. That same Center for Health Security also held Event 201, was one of the organizers of Event 201. Just one month, actually, before officially this novel coronavirus started spreading, they were handing out coronavirus plushies to the attendees and simulating what would happen in the event of a globally spreading coronavirus pandemic. I don't know. That would be a starting point for my investigation.
I looked back in H1N1 in 2009 when they did the TARP. It's Obama. They camouflaged a lot of that stuff with this H1N1 thing. And they were calling that novel H1N1. I thought, how many novel coronas do we get? You know, and I was looking back at the headlines from 2009. It's the same as now. That was a dry run.
Well, H1N1 is influenza, so it's a different thing.
Whatever.
There are novel coronaviruses. I'm not saying that's a conspiracy per se, but it's just a lot of things line up with regard.
Hey, James, I know China and Japan have, let's just say, a tenuous relationship from living over there. We in the old Japan times. I don't know if it's still around. But the thing is, we're looking at, I think, a drumbeat that we're all hearing that China's the bad guy, and we always have to have a war to get us out of a depression. So we know that's coming, and China's probably going to be the target or made the target. So where does Japan? Is Japan like angry, or did you hear drumbeats against China over there?
Or blamed? It's a good question. It's been an interesting relationship. Clearly, there have been historical tensions, shall we say, antagonisms between China and Japan. And it's always been my intention that, contention that when we see Japan moving away from the U.S. umbrella and moving under the Chinese umbrella, that will be one good sign of a new world order. Quite literally, there will be a complete change. I haven't seen that yet, and I haven't heard the drumbeat. I It's a good question. I haven't heard the drumbeat for war, or, you know, it's that is damn Chinese. I haven't heard that so much in Japan at this point. I'm seeing it more and more in the English-speaking world online. So I know that that's happening right now. And I've talked about this for years. I think China-US is going to be the manipulated, engineered conflict of the 21st century, like US-Soviet Union with the Cold War paradigm for the 20th century. That is coming, and it's coming a lot faster than I actually thought. World War III of some sort is already underway, in a sense. It's just a question of how they formalize that and what that actually means. It doesn't mean soldiers on a battlefield. It might mean such things as biowarfare. So, yes, that is happening. I don't know about Japan's relation in that, but I think long-term, assuming this is the Chinese century, as people are saying, I think Japan will be moving under that Chinese umbrella, which will be a crazy thing to watch because, as I say, historical tensions. Ultimately, I think China is going to take the place, if not world hegemon, at least a regional superpower that will be the kind of antagonist boogeyman in the 1984 Big Brother structure of the world that they're trying to engineer us into. And Japan is probably going to have its bread buttered on the Chinese side more so than the American side at that point.
All right, man, I know you got to go. Thanks for spending time with us. I wish you had more time. I was ready to man.
That was quite the deal for next time, though, so I loved it.
Tell you what, how about when the world stops being collapsing around?
Oh, stop! When the hell is that going to happen?
Exactly. Anyway, guys, I got to go.
All right.
John A.
Peace, brother. Bye. So did you try, Tim, did you try to see if Luke come on?
Yeah, he didn't. I actually asked him earlier today.
He didn't want to play?
I don't really think he was willing to play, and he killed the Judy interview, but I don't want to talk too much about that.
Are you going to edit it and put it up? I talked to Judy today. She enjoyed the interview. I don't think she understood. She kind of got the impression that maybe, you know, what she had to say calling BS on it, Luke didn't like.
Yeah, and he was, you know, yeah, afterwards, like, well, you know, if we do put it out, we're going to have all these provisos and disclaimers, and we can get sued. And she was, you know. In
what?
Jail, you know, so.
Fear is the mind killer, man.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm trying to provide the other perspective because I think this is all a plandemic that they're trying, that this is all going to burst anyways. They were going to blame it on the Chinese or the Russians. Hillary didn't get in there, so they couldn't go with that. So plan, you know, C or D or F or whatever far down the totem pole this plan ended up being was the plan that, okay, if everything was going great, if it wasn't for this damn, you know, novel coronavirus, and now we've got this is the skeleton key to get everything out. I mean, I'm seeing articles right now on Drudge where it's talking about the Fed basically is easing up capital requirements for the big banks. So there's, you know, so they already don't have to reserve any of your money to begin with. And now there's additional things that they're making, that they're even decreasing whatever little stuff they had to do to begin with. But yeah, this is the move. Let me go to John Snyson's website right now at theeconomictruth.org.
Okay, real quick. You did on your, you had a Zoom setting on your camera. What the hell was that? What camera is that?
I have the Handycam 4K AX53 or something like that. So
of course.
Well, send me that because, damn it, you know, I'm like, I've been needing that. I want that, whatever that is.
I'll tell you, this Stream Deck switcher I have.
I got it. I ordered it. It's coming to Saturday to Derek's.
Because we all need to see Ernie in Zoom mode.
And one of my settings, so right from here, there's about there's about 12 different scenes I can switch through when I'm doing things with Luke. I even got like soundboard going on here. I can go straight to YouTube on here. I can record. I even have a Bitcoin price ticker and one of these dials. So I know, so I can look down and see the price of Bitcoin in real time too on this thing.
Wow.
So not because you need to, but because.
No, yeah. I showed Derek that and he goes, gimme, 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 gimme. Now I need a gimme, gimme, gimme on this camera. send me the link or whatever that is.
The camera's more expensive than the stream.
Yeah, whatever. I need to be able to do the Zoom thing. You know, that's pimp.
And this is the same. It's the same camera that Josh Sigerson has. So you know,
yeah. Blah blah blah. Send me the link.
All right, I will. If I'm like, oh, you know, if I get the same one he has, then he can't pitch at me for not having good enough stuff. So
yeah. Bad audio is a hate crime. Okay. The
I have a question for Tim. Tim, before we get another topic, I have a friend of mine who's a banker. I've asked him if he wanted to be on the show, but he's just incognito his whole life. He just stays under the radar and leaves everyone alone. Last 40 years, but he
was raised by. Show to be on then, if you want to be.
Yeah, I know exactly. He was raised by his grandparents the way I was, and it's one of the reasons he and I became friends. I mean, we're like childhood friends. because being brought up by your grandparents from the Great Depression years, you tend to be a little different than your peers back in the
1980s. I was brought up by my grandparents as well, so.
Were you? Oh, I didn't realize. No wonder the three of us seem to have a different understanding of money. But anyway, he was telling me that one of the things about the FDIC, because I love that post that Ernie did with that chair lady of the FDIC, with the piano music behind her saying,
leave your money in. It's all fine.
Leave your money in.
I had the same clip on the show with Luke and I, too, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, it was fantastic. Well, Ernie had the greatest clip, the little quote. He goes, yeah, I expected her to wave her hand and say that these were not the droids you're looking for. Oh, I'm still crying when I hear that. So anyway, but the question is, my friend had mentioned that, yes, we're insured now since 2008 for $250,000. But he reminded me of something that I heard, and I can't remember the reasons, that if the bank fails, it doesn't mean you're getting your money, right? Like, you get a certain percentage of it or something. Is that true? Like, how does that really work? I mean, I just thought that, okay, they pay you $250, but it's inflated dollars. You're made whole, but it's not worth anything. But he was making it sound like it's not because it's coming from the Fed. It's coming from the FDIC, and therefore,
they run out of money.
Yeah.
Your money is now their money, and they changed the rule after Obama to then make that. Now, I agree with more what you were saying, Dr. Frank, that that's probably what will happen. First off, there's the rules. Guess what happens every time a big calamity ensues?
They change the rule.
And so guess what? They're going to change the rules. It's way easier to just print a bunch of money and do that than it is to go and give everybody a haircut, so to speak, like they did in Cyprus. And so I think it's way easier for them to turn the printing presses on, do that, and then give you your 250 back. Now, they might do something where, let's say you've got 900,000 in the bank, and maybe they go and they insure you for 250, and then their money, you're just SOL. That might happen. I mean, and they'll probably start it with, if you're worth over $10 million or, some politically expedient thing to do. And I don't see them outright confiscating it. I see them confiscating it via inflation. However, in the short term, I see the dollar actually strengthening throughout all this. So, topic I've been talking about. So I'm a contrarian amongst a lot of people, because I was on stage at TDV Investment Summit at the all speaker Q&A saying I thought Bitcoin on record would go down 50-80% during the next financial crisis, and that you'd also see the dollar rapidly strengthen. I mean, I'm lucky no one had tomatoes in the audience, because everyone's like, how can a guy, Aaron Capoco, who's a financial advisor, who's so right about everything, how could he think this? It's exactly what happened. Bitcoin absolutely plummeted during this whole thing about 50%. And then you've seen the dollar have a rapid actually increase, but that increase, that strength will eventually lead to its weakness as other countries have to borrow in dollars. And then their currency goes down. Let's say it goes down 20%. Now you've got to make 20% more money to pay back your loan denominated in dollars. And that strength will then lead to weakness. Very interesting concept. And Ernie, you should probably get on a guy named Harry Dent on your show sometime. He had a great book called The Demographic Cliff, which I'm holding up. Now, he did an interview on Alex Jones several years ago, where it was him, Peter Schiff, going out.
I just saw him on Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Kiyosaki has a show, and Dent was on. That was just yesterday or something. I was watching him.
Yeah, I haven't heard him in like 5 or 6 years.
Well, give me his contact information. I'm all over it.
Oh, I need to get his contact.
You want Don to do it? Oh, okay, I get it.
But anyway, he would be a good person to get on. Maybe John Perkins too, from Economic Hitman, would probably be another.
I've had John Perkins on a lot. We used to be all palsy and everything until he got really embraced by the progressive movement. They wanted to use him to do whatever. And I could see what was it. It's always been philosophical with me. I'm like, what's the proper role of government? And every one of these guys, no matter who you talk to about whatever, they're not looking at it philosophically. They're looking at it as, what can government do for the little guy? And I'm going, yeah, here comes Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. And I'm just, after all that, this bailout and everything that Trump just did, he eclipsed anything that Bernie and Warren could have ever dreamed of. This is, I go, yeah, Bernie, were you willing to put in $6 trillion and just give it out to everybody? I'm going, Trump did.
It's Republican socialism, Ernie.
No, that's okay then, So, Frank, you got to answer that, man. Trump has eclipsed Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren on this one.
Total eclipse of the heart.
Eclipse of my wallet.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure what position you want me to take on it. I mean, look, I've never said that Donald Trump is Ron Paul. I mean, that's never been my issue. I mean, Donald Trump, I've supported him for other reasons. You know, as far as Ron Paul, I mean, I supported Austrian economics, my candidates, all the way up until Donald Trump. And the reason it wasn't because Donald Trump made me just throw economics out, it's because at that point I gave up on the system, just like Ernie had as well. I mean, people are idiots, obviously. You still have this denial of allowing third parties, you know, in any way into the system. You know, now the Tea Party was starting to grow, but the Tea Party is being co-opted, of course, by the neocons as well. Ernie's got all kinds of stories on that. But Ron Paul said himself, you know, and this is how I see it. Ron Paul said himself in 2012, when he 2008, when he ran, he said that there was a chance to still fix the economy. I'm just simplifying up from his interviews.
Yeah, he basically said that. No, they're not.
And then he said there was still a chance we could do it if we make all these hard decisions. But by 2012, it's like his heart wasn't in it, and he pretty much said, "Look, the ship has sailed. We can't turn it around at this point. It's going to happen. Depression, whatever. We're going to have a failure. The collapse of the dollar, a failure. It's going to happen, but I'll run anyway.
So just hurry up and get it over with." Yeah.
Exactly. To just educate people, and at least that way. And of course, the system still ignored him and laughed and the usual crap. And of course, he himself didn't fight back. And that was a lot of my anger, was watching Republicans from the stupid Fox News and other places not really defend him or defend someone that was caring about the debt clock that they always bring up whenever Democrats are in power. Democrats are in power, they bring up the debt clock. Republicans are in power, they ignore it. And here's Ron Paul bringing it up, and they would just ignore it. So to keep it simple. So Trump's I was agreeing with
exact,
that.
Trump's exact quote, "Who cares about the debt? We've got a country now." And that was in February. So
yeah. So anyway, I was frustrated with beyond frustrated. And yeah, I was angry at the fact that Rand Paul begged us for money for Ron Paul. And then we donated at the last minute. And then he turned around and, you know, he sits there and he endorses you know, whatever. No, that was Rand Paul when he was yeah. No, it was Ron Paul.
Romney.
It was Ron Paul. Yeah, I mean, Ron Paul bailed out at the last. I mean, just, you know, obviously I was so hit with that. And then, for a fact, he wouldn't fight back, and that was the part that angered me so much. Maybe because I'm Italian in Philly, I wanted him to stick it to him. Every time they're sticking it to him and shutting us out at the primaries and turn off the air conditioner, to at least talk about it, to push it out there. And he would just kind of meekly say, and again, I love Dr. Paul, don't get me wrong. He would just go, "Well, you know, they're not ready for the message," and all of this. So when Donald Trump came, I'm like, you know what? Here's what I'm seeing. The economy screwed one way or the other. I've also had another 10 years to prepare, because if you weren't preparing before 2008, which I was, you at least got a wake-up call. You had your first minor heart attack in 2008. So that's when you stopped smoking, you hit the gym, and you stopped drinking, you know, the tequila every day. And at that point, you get a reprieve. Of course, did America do that? No, they went right back to binge eating and drinking and watching and bonbons, whatever else. So at that point, I know the American people were beyond screwed, and we need the great culling that Ernie talks about. So then I see Donald Trump come, and I realize he's going to fight back against the system. I see the corruption of the deep state more and more, and the media covering the entire thing up. We've got the Epstein issue. We got all these things. And to me, the economy is going to die anyway. So therefore, I kind of just jettisoned the economy. Not that it doesn't matter. I want to be clear. It completely does. But to me, that ship has sailed. To me, what I want to know is, who's going to be in charge, and who, what country, what culture are we going to have to try to rebuild from it? And that means also fighting to get our rights back or to rebuild it. And the fact that they destroyed our culture and split it up and said we don't have, and that's what I argue with Ernie when he says that we don't have a culture. Like, what's the American culture?
I'll tell you who's going to be in charge. It's going to be me.
Yeah, I know.
Me.
We'll have the Hancock, Ernie Hancock dollar pretty soon. So I sat there and I look at all of this. And I go, you know what? That is my support of Donald Trump. And my libertarian friends think that I completely have, you know, I don't understand the economy. And how come Donald Trump's doing X, Y, Z? It's because that's not the priority to me anymore. It's to be able to unify this country, get rid of the socialized news system, decentralize it, allow it to come from the people from the ground up. Now, Ernie might argue that that was going to happen anyway. And you're probably right. Let's just say Donald Trump facilitated it, and he stuck it to them, and he basically, between tweeting and
Trump was very inspirational to a lot of people around the world, that individuals mattered and that they could have an opinion and that it was against the man and all this stuff. So it did have an impact around the world. But when he, you know, capitulated to the needs of the government, the continuation of government, you know, the government, to make sure that we got to have a government. And I had Alan Corwin on, and I don't know if Tim knows Alan very well, but Frank, you know who I'm talking about. Alan Corwin, the gun guy, gunlaws.com.
Yes.
I know who you're talking about. I don't know.
He's big Republican, JPFO, NRA, kind of, you know, got to vote the right way and get to kind of have government and borders. And so he constantly today, he was like, well, Ernie, what about, and you would say, and he was trying to get me to capitulate on some issue with the, well, okay, well, we need government for that. Ah, well, then you need government for, I mean, you know, I'm going, Alan, it isn't going to work, man. I go, what do we got now? I go, what are you saying? We're going to have anarchy or something? You know, I got what I got now or none. I vote none. Mr. Cotter. Oh, I got an answer. None. Okay. I will vote none compared to what we got now, because the worst you can get with a none is that, what, a riot or somebody who's going to come in, we're going to take you over. There's nobody to
leave your house.
There's nobody to surrender. There's nobody to agree. There's no Vichy French to go around saying, oh, okay, well, we're good, but the underground is, this mindset that somehow a country of individuals where the proper role of government is defense of individual rights. That's the declaration, and that's the point, is that they are there to defend individual rights. When they don't do that, time to alter or abolish it, your right, your duty. Boom. That mindset is what is the threat. That mindset, that heritage, that proper role of government in the small republic, all that is what is the threat to they, them, those. That is the threat to globalism. That is the threat to even nationalism. That is the threat, is when people start thinking, I'm boss of freaking me. You know, and my house, it's my rules, and get over it. And that's why teenagers want to leave and go do their own thing and peace and, you know, whatever. That's not the way it is anymore. When you start talking, and every time you say it, Frank, it just, you know, tings my cortex when you go, but our culture of what? Keep thinking about a collective murka. You want a flag waving and Zeke Heil to some, you know, Presidente or something. I'm going, hell no. That is not the promise. That's not what made this country great. That's not the heritage that we took to being one of the most powerful nations on the planet. That's not where our inspiration comes from. That's not what people look to America to be about. That's not it. That is not.
Culture is not saying the pledge. Culture is not singing singing a song. You think of it simplistically like that.
The culture is the worship of the individual. That is our culture. That used to be our culture. Yankee ingenuity. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. You know, that's not it anymore. They have to have that go away. And they will take a nationalistic Trump over an individualistic Ron Paul every day, because that's a step towards globalism.
Well, how do you know that the culture of individualism is that gone? How do you know that?
It's not.
Well, of course it's not. Donald Trump helped ignite a lot of it. I mean, people who gave up. See, you're making the same mistake that fake news does. You think that Trump just shows up and people are just buying into the red hats and feel good, America. Yeah.
Americans.
Exactly. I mean, and that's oversimplification. He's tapping into the people that have been told, as you say all the time, the goal of the media is to make you think that your neighbors all agree with the media and you're the odd man out. And you're afraid to talk to your neighbors because no one talks to your neighbors anymore. They don't sit out on the store on your steps like back in Philadelphia. You sit out in the summer because it's too hot inside. And you meet with the neighbors and you talk, or you meet at church. No one goes to church. People don't unify. People are busy working 50 jobs to pay for all the damn taxes. And the women are working now because they have to, not because they want to. It goes on and on. Every way that they've taken and divided people and made people basically strangers in their own house from each other. And that's what they've done. And so many people feel like they really are still American, but with that individuality, with the same character of American culture, but it's been sequestered. They've been told to sit down, shut up, or you're a racist and a bigot and then this and then that. And even when the Republicans would go, the so-called Republican Party, they just put up neocons, all those stinking losers from the Bushes and Mitt Romney and Bob Dole. And we go, well, the whole list of them. John McCain was like the patriarch of all of them. I mean, that is why they despise Donald Trump. That's why when Donald Trump came to Arizona, Doug Ducey didn't even go to introduce and say hi to him at the rally because he was given marching orders. Oh, that this guy's the pariah. The entire deep state.
Well, he got marching orders to do this lockdown in Arizona thing, too. They're all getting marching orders. Who's giving the marching orders?
Oh, geez. Oh, let's not get into that right now. I'm talking about the culture issue. And you know, one of the
culture of governors taking marching orders, like, I guarantee that.
We have an American culture. And the more you know, I would love to have James, if we get back on the show, I would love for James to answer that question or this argument between you and I. Because I guarantee that he understands American culture. Well, whether he likes it or not, it's a different story. But he can see American culture because he's outside the damn bubble. You represent the culture. Ernie, you're the walking embodiment of American culture. And you'll sit there and say there's no American culture. I mean, the point is you are.
No, I'm saying that the culture that's being supported, represented, trying to be manifested, certainly being touted, is one of thou shalt obey and rule of law. That's what Alan was going on about. Do you believe in the rule of law? What, that you get to make a law and I have to be ruled by it? I mean, what are you saying? You know, this is all going to come out. Not a doubt in my freaking mind. In the end, it's going to come down to we go crazy in herds and, you know, get our sanity individually. And it's going to be individual. They're going, well, Ernie, and then he tries to fud me. He goes, well, when you go on your love bus tour and you get to the border, well, they're going to explain it to you then. I'm going, yeah, maybe. And then I just park there and turn on all my streaming, and I'm just here until they let my people go. I mean, you know, they have no idea what they're up against. And what they're up against is the same thing that they were up against in 08 and 1776 and, you know, freaking all throughout our history is when just individual people go, no, I'm calling BS on that. And people are going to be calling BS on this because I don't give a crap who says and how much. After so much time, there will come a time that they are not going to stay in their homes. And what happened in L.A., I got 40, 50 cops sitting there breaking up birthday parties, you know, because of Corona and everything. Sooner or later, they're pushing back. Sooner or later, they're shooting back. And then
I
what?
Agree.
These guys need, want, desire, have to have violence. They want the people to rebel. They need them to rebel because what's going on? All of these cops, all of these municipal employees, all of the firemen, all of the politicians, their pensions are gone. And it doesn't matter how much inflated dollars they give to them, it isn't going to buy them the beans they need. And when that happens, you get exactly what happened in the Soviet Union when it crashed down, because you got the guys in the tanks going into Moscow and they're going, hey, we're not going to lay waste to these people. They're not even paying us. You know, what the hell? So then you do the same thing that's going on in Hong Kong and China and Shenzhen. So what do? They bring in the people from the hinterland and say, oh, they're Western corrupt of whatever, get in the tank and start mowing down people. At some point, even the soldiers, even the people, just say no. So then what do? Drones and robots. You think there's not going to be, it's going to be Skynet all over again. You know, at some point, they're going to find out and people are going to know who the bad guys are. And the bad guys are going to be wearing shiny badges and they're going to have rule of law on their side. And it's not going to make any difference. So I'm just, you know, this culture that you're talking about, I'm like, yeah.
What I'm talking about. Like it's just some like throwaway
thing. What culture?
Thing.
Which
what
one?
Thing is.
Which one?
Oh
that worship of government? You know, Zieg Heil to the flag. You know, B-2 bombers at opening day.
Well, I've got my daughter here, and I've been standing here for 10 hours. I haven't left like this spot pretty much all day doing videos and podcasts and stuff. So, I am enjoying this. But I think the last thing I want to say is that, you know, with Trump, maybe we're at the 10-yard line going into globalism. I thought he was going to maybe at least hold us at the 10-yard line, and now he's got us at the 2-yard line or the 1-yard line. Everyone wants to take a victory lap of how he's made everything great, and how the debt doesn't matter because we have a country again. Right now we don't have a country. The debt's exploding. I agree with what Dr. Frank is saying about, you know, the culture, but and Ernie represents the culture, except, however, Ernie represents, you know, 0.00, you know,
right.
Ernie or us.
Sliver of the culture.
Sliver. Anyways, no, I really appreciate the opportunity to be on, and I'm sure I'll listen to the rest of this on podcast, but I've got Summer right here. Is she?
Hi, Summer.
You can't.
Hi, Summer.
Say hi in the microphone.
Howdy,
hey,
yo.
Where's my cookie? Did you bring enough for the whole class?
No. Don't press those buttons. No, I'm coming through the headphones, so she couldn't hear you. So
okay, all right. Well, that's all right. All right. See you later, Tim. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Tim.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Frank, you know, we'd be probably wrapping up too, but I tell you, you know, this is the argument that we continually have, that I have with everybody. You know, it's like, Ernie, you're just two something. And I'm like, what am I two something of?
No, what you are is you're American, and I'm proud. That's why you're my friend. And the thing is, you're so American, you can't see it. You're like, I had a debate with Savarda, my better half, and I was talking about accents one time. And I was talking about how, well, if you have a East Coast accent, like a Philly or New York accent, people automatically think you're a hustler. And if you have a Southern accent, it's been proven people think that you're not quite as smart, you know. And there's just different, you know, people's stereotypes. And I talked about an Arizona accent, and she looked at me with this dumbfounded look. She goes, well, there's no Arizona accent. I talk normal. And I said, what? And I sat there. We went. That went a whole another hour. It was like a debate, like you and I, of her taking the stand that every state has an accent but Arizona. And it's like, it's incredulous that people cannot see themselves or in the bubble. They don't. Everyone else is in the bubble, but you. And that's where you're at with this. And that's such a joy to be able. Maybe this will show you what the culture is. And with that, we have to wrap this up. But I think what Donald Trump has done, he's tapped into it. By the Twitter, getting around the media, which you saw originally.
Yeah.
These rallies, what do you think these rallies are that they won't publicize all the time on TV? These rallies are the culture bubbling out.
On the promise. Like is he delivering the promise?
I believe he is. Because, look, before everyone jumps on him, everyone who's listening, and they go, oh, like it's like the minute he does one thing, everyone jumps on him and says, oh, well, he did this wrong. And then how many times does he do or say something and he reverses it later? He plays the long game. He's a poker player. He may seem as if he's giving over here and somewhere else. Is he perfect? No. Are problems going to happen? Yes. But before everyone just assumes that, okay, well, he talked a good game, but the minute this calamity happens, well, it looks like he's folding up, and here come the tanks, and he's going to sell out the Constitution to the highest bidder with the put his Trump name on the next dollar bill. No, that is. Let's just wait to see how this thing plays out. I mean, who knows? I mean, it's definitely going to get worse. The real key is, how does this resolve? How do we return to normalcy as much? How does he put people in place to make sure that you don't have the deep state keep these permanent power grabs? How do we make sure these aren't precedents, but these are historical lessons? You know, look, the last thing I want to say very quickly on the culture, and by the way, this is, I was arguing to myself not to bring this up because you're going to oversimplify it. Like it's all about America. That's what you think this culture is. But I have to tell you, just one little taste of it was when I went to the inauguration, for Donald Trump's inauguration. I was able to get, I was right front and center. I could see Donald Trump with my own eyes. That's how close I was. And I was there, and I was there like, we would get like 2 a.m. to get in line, and all the security and people with rifles and snipers and black helicopters. You can imagine the security, especially during that 2016 inauguration, how angry, and the rioters. And of course, the Women's March was all getting staged for the next day. I mean, the tensions were high. And I was there, and there were what? It seemed like a million people. I know it was less than that. Donald Trump said, oh, everyone was at my place. Yeah, whatever. There was hundreds of thousands of people as far as the eye can see. And we're all sitting there, and everyone's all excited. Here comes Donald Trump, and they're doing all the speeches and all this. And then right before Donald Trump actually did the swearing in, they brought out a lot of the head people, including the ex-presidents. And out comes Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, who was only there because she was the wife of the next president. And when she walked out, my God, the entire mall, hundreds of thousands. I mean, I've never heard so many people just at once just go, lock her up. I mean, I have to say, I never felt this way. I'm embarrassed to say this, but for a split second, I felt nervous. I'm thinking, I'm in the belly of the beast. I've got all this black everything around me and snipers and police beyond anything, the rectal exam to get there. And I've got the criminal mastermind almost right there. And for a split second, I almost felt like nervous. I'm in the Soviet Union. Like, oh my God, we're going to get in trouble. And yet the power of all of these people coming out, just the power of that moment, being at that place, sticking it and telling those people, not just her, because it's not just about her. She's just a figurehead of so much deeper corruption. We all get it. But that, I'll never forget that moment. And now you never saw, I checked the video. I wanted to see if it was on, if it was recorded. You never could hear that. They definitely clipped that out on CNN. I checked Fox. I checked others. And you can't really get the audio of it because it was such a giant murmur, like if you've ever been in a huge crowd, it doesn't always show up.
Yeah, if you're not there, you're not there.
Exactly, if you weren't there. And I'll tell you what, guys, it was a moment I'll never forget. That is the American, if nothing else, I don't want to simplify American culture about just saying a lot.
You know, I got to give this.
It was that resistance. It was the resistance against the system that Trump tapped into.
Well, so these things are, you know, they represent. You get the same thing from when Obama's inauguration. The fact that there were so many people so proud, you know, that there was a black president. This was like a big deal. And I'm like, you know, at the time, I'm like, cool. You know, let them have their day. I mean, it's all, you know, BS anyway. I mean, I don't care. You know, they feel good about themselves. Fine. But the same thing with Obama. The same thing with Trump. In the end, they're not in charge. Okay. And I'm just like, they go, well, who would be your president? Me. I'm boss of me. How about that? You know, and that was the promise. You know, that we were had our own plan. The only purpose of government was to make sure we could have our own plan. You know, they didn't have a plan for me other than I could have my own plan. You know, that's been gone. But I think we keep getting closer and closer to the realization that that's kind of really what the deal was and why America was so prosperous. It's just that we lost it. And, well, since we can't get it back, we need to, like, have them rule us better. And I'm going, no. Do like Iceland did. When the financial crisis hit and it's 2009, they go, we just dissolved our government. I don't know what they owed before, but we're not them anymore. We started the government out of people out of the phone book, and we're starting over and screw it. Literally, you know? So I'm going, this is what eventually is going to happen. There is going to be an abandonment of these institutions. It's going to be medicine, healthcare. It's going to be finance. It's going to be energy distribution or non-distribution. It's just going to be people with their own freaking solar panels. I mean, it's going to be pirates, piratewithoutborders.com. You go to each one of these categories, and it's going to be empowerment of the individual. And all of this, somebody's going to fix it for us, is the sickness. That culture, that aspect of whatever culture they're trying to make us in, you know, we're on the same team and pulled everybody row at the in the same and somebody barking stroke something. I'm like, wow, that when that's gone, and I'm not even waiting anymore. You know, we're just doing it. We're going to go out on the road for a year, May to May, you know, 2021, then looking for a place and doing, just set an example of this is how we're doing it because we know how to do it and we're doing it. Technology is there to do it. And for me, it was three things. Communication, we're going to satellite-based ones and zeros to bite me. We have power. The solar is really kicking ass, especially here in the Southwest, and getting cheap as hell. And battery tech. Man, it's done. And then we got energy, communication, and water. And I get access, and they want to control me. You have to be on the municipal, get your fluoride water. I guarantee that. I'm going to get me a well, and we're done. So those three, that's another thing I keep finding out. A lot of the free-thinking people, overwhelming, have been brought up on well water. They were not municipal getting drugged of whatever the hell. So I'm going, think about
that's
it.
That's interesting.
You look at the people that have grown up, you know, that are just not, they're more rebellious or whatever. Did you have a well when you were a kid? Well, yes, I did. And all of a sudden, bing, bing, Bob brought that up. You know, we were back east. He goes, yeah, I think it's a well thing. And everybody, I'm going, holy crap. and the effort that the man's getting into to try and get you on their water system. I remember it happened in Gilbert. Gilbert, remember they used to have like Bible Day and all this other crap, and they're against the government doing all kinds of mandates and everything. All of a sudden, they came in and said, yep, your people got to get it. You're too much well water, man. We got to fix you. And made them get on Mesa's municipal water system. And I go, and you don't hear about them anymore. I'm like, wow. Wow. So this is, these things are going to be, you know, the 5G stuff and the this G and the chemtrail. And everybody goes, Ernie, do you conspiracist? Do you think they, them, those? Who are they? I tell you, they are. The ones who won't leave me alone. That's who they, them, those. So I go, if they can maintain, enhance, and expand their own power and influence over your life and sacrifice you for their benefit, if they can, if they physically can, they are, because they can. I mean, it's not like they wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong. And then we get Biden. What does he say? Yeah, it's going to be hard to have Democratic National Convention where you can get me out. And count on voting by mail in November. So I'm going, so what do you think, Frank? We're going to have a vote by mail and Trump's going to win that one? Huh? Huh? Huh?
Yeah, he's going to win. I think.
Spoiler alert, Hillary wins.
I know. I think that I was going to say on the air the other day, you know, I know you're going to jump on me, but I'd like to say, I'd like to think that Donald Trump was born for this moment. And I know you're going to probably vomit saying that. But
no, I don't know anybody else that would have been able to hold up against all this crap. I thought it was amazing that he's been able to just tweet his way out of this, you know?
Guys, just think of this. I mean, he just went through 3 to 4 years of taking on the deep state. He just finally beat them. It's like you just finished. He finally turned the corner. And then just as you got out of the hurricane, you turned into the maelstrom. I mean, my God, and he is still focused. It is unbelievable, this man. But think about this for guys. The man's a builder. That's what he does. This country needs to be rebuilt. He does it by talking to the lay people. The reason that he's so angry at the establishment is because he was kept out. Him and his family were kept out. They were considered like just white trash as far as the millionaires.
Nouveau riche.
Right? There's even a pecking order against millionaires. And he was treated like George Washington and the founding fathers were. You know, the British historians have said that the moon, that the flag on the moon would be the Union Jack if all King George did was make George Washington a nobleman. All he had to do, because all Washington wanted was respect. He's like, look, I've busted my butt over here in this new world. I've tamed this place, and you guys still treat me as if I'm a commoner because I wasn't born to the right people. And that shouldn't matter, because the lords and all those in England were born into with silver spoons. They're all dumbasses, and they're lazy over there, and we're busting our butt doing things over here, and you treat us as if we're nothing. And so they were so angry. That is what fueled so much of this revolution and sticking it to the man that we still have with today, Ernie Hancock. So that is what we have. Donald Trump comes from that. He became a millionaire or billionaire, but he did so without doing it the way the establishment of millionaire billionaires do it. He did it by socializing with the commoners. He would go to the construction sites. That is, he would go on the Howard Stern show. He would sit there and speak with people at ground zero, which is why he knows how to switch gears. He's extremely intelligent to deal with the millionaires, billionaires, the politicians, the bankers, world leaders. He does it all the time. But at the end of the day, he can hang out with the janitor and knows exactly how he thinks and earns his trust, not by lying, but he really gets them because he, like the janitor,
I think he can connect. I think it's passed on to his kids. I think that there's a lot of good to be said there. But this country doesn't need to be built. It needs to be left alone.
No, wait. Ernie, you didn't let me finish my point. I was setting up the point that he has earned the respect of common people who feel that they've been ignored and lied to and basically treated with disrespect in all sorts of ways. Because he has. Even though he's a millionaire, billionaire, the CNN likes to say, what the heck? If he's a billionaire, then we'll give you Bloomberg. He's the same thing. It's not. He's not. And that's what they don't get. Trump is a blue-collar worker who just hit the lottery. And I say that through a lot of hard work. So here's the thing. He is a builder, though, and he hangs out with these people, and he gets it. And he does it through by building, by getting regulations and bullshit done and out of the way. Think about the ice skating rink. That ice skating rink in Central Park. It was like 15 years they couldn't do it. Bureaucracy. Trump says, F this. He's on the Howard Stern show. I'll get it done. Watch me. 30 days, bam, he gets the ice skating rink. And then that's continued all the way up till today. Just look at the press conference he's had with what's his name, Dr. Fauci. Just watch how the CNN likes to divide the two of them over the issue of the hydrochloroquine and the Z-Pak. Think about this for a minute. You know, the media keeps saying, what do you think about these possible miracle drugs that could help us out? And then the man, Dr. Fauci, gets up there with all of his shiny badge and says, well, it hasn't been approved, and this and that and that, and this and that, and it hasn't gone through certification. And then Donald Trump, they ask the president, he goes, well, you know what? If you're going to die, give it a try. Why not?
Yeah.
You know what? And it's already been proven safe by you silver badge people anyway. So let's just let people try.
Africans rush to chloroquine as virus tsunami looms. It's happening. All of a sudden now the same governors here in the United States saying, oh, it's banned. Now they're begging for it. The hypocrisy and the stupidity and the lack of freedom and options, it's so thick. You're still voting? I see they're going to be stuck. All these people are stocking up. They're afraid. They're not afraid. They're just stocking up because they know what's coming.
No, I know. But I just put the punctuation on this, punctuation mark, it's the fact that when I say he's a builder, it's not like he's trying to build it for you like the government, like Obama says, well, we built it for you, you did it. No, Trump's thing is, get the hell out of the way, let the people do it. He's shown it as a citizen, and he's showing it right now in the face of this thing. He's sitting there in face of the FDA and the CDC, and they're saying, how does it go through regulation? He's like, screw it. And he's gotten rid of regulations. He's gotten rid of regulations for doctors to be able to treat over state lines. I mean, now, Garnett, you might argue that you don't need his permission, because, and I agree with you too, when the system collapses, it doesn't matter that people are going to do what they want to do. And I certainly understand that. But this is a president, I don't believe, who's going to stand in the way and keep trying to prop it up and say, no, but you have to be able to listen to us and tell it, and we have to tell you when it's approved. He's like, go ahead and do it. And to so much that CNN's sitting there trying to...
I thought he belied... Trump really... when Tony Fauci is up there going, oh, no, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Kind of, I'm big pharma and you got to do, and we got to get a grant and give us a bunch of money. And, he's going, try it. He knew what impact he was going to have. Now, here I'm showing the audience up here, that Ben Soprenowitz, just today, I think this is up there. And he goes, Michigan Democrat clown asks feds for hydroxychloroquine to treat Chinese coronavirus 4 days after she banned its use. And I'm going, yep. On Friday, March 27th, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer threatened to revoke the medical licenses of doctors and pharmacists who prescribe hydroxychloroquine to treat coronavirus in Michigan. 4 days later, March 31st, the same governor asked the federal government to send her hydroxychloroquine to treat coronavirus patients. I'm just, the hypocrisy, the BS, the stupidity is so thick on everywhere for everything. I'm done trying to highlight it. All I want to do is make sure that people know that they have options. Do it your freaking self. There's a friend of mine, he had hepatitis C. It was Trevor, a friend of Dean's. He was one of the marshals at the Ron Paul Revolution March in Washington, whatever. And he's an activist. I know him for a long time. He raised the money and spent a few thousand dollars getting it from India, because the treatment was, legal in India, and he had to go through a bunch of crap, got it shipped here for him under how the hell he did it, to cure, so he didn't have to have a liver transplant. And I'm going, there's medication? He goes, yeah. It's illegal here. They want, because they're making money on, like, this is all of these. There's story after story after story after story like this. And then when you have doctors, you know, like yourself, or you have, you know, attorneys like my friend Richard, or, you know, Alex, you know, the dentist that was here, or we have, you know, at the party, they're all going, I can't stay open. I can't afford it. I can't wait on the next time. I can't, you know, get the crumbs from the table of kind of maybe sort of and almost in taxes and regulations, and you're doing it wrong, and you're not in the right program. You got to be with the insurance or your employee of, and got it. And that's one thing that's coming out of this corona thing too. You got to work and be and live at the hospital and kind of work you to death like you're in Canada or UK or something. And I'm going, and where's the door-to-door house call doctor thing? This, that's all done, and they are amping it up to where the people finally go, and we're done. And that is, and if that's a culture that you're looking for, well, that's the American culture that I've been waiting on, is that. But to think that this government's going to represent some culture, they're just looking for a parade to jump in front of. Woohoo, pick me, you know? And I'm going, and they can't understand it. And it's like the scene from The Matrix where you have, you know, the Oracle sitting there, you know, with Neo, and explaining to him how the architect, the head of the machine world, he can't understand. He doesn't have the faculties. They're sociopaths. They can't even fake it. They don't know how. So I'm going, once people see all this and they understand it, and it's going to take a while for the Federal Reserve become understood by enough people that they just, and we're done. What has to happen? It's a movie. I want Trump the movie. I want The Big Short. You know, The Big Short Part 2, okay? After a while, people are going to start to understand that they have been so screwed, and it's not just them. Whatever benefit they thought they got as they're getting near the end of their life and baby, okay, boomer, you know, you're ready for all your retirement, and it's gone. And then the future of their children, and they're gone. And the grand gone, great-grandkid gone, future gone. Until there's a revolution again with understanding. And what happened in the American Revolution, the beginning, the cause was Thomas Paine, common sense. There has to be a common sense. What is for the cause? What cause? What the hell cause is Trump? Cause? What cause? Well, he sure as shit gave up the cause when he got with the Fed and all of a sudden and $6 trillion and here we go. The cause? What cause? Give me a cause. You know,
I'll tell you what the cause. You know what we should do? We should maybe do some readings from Common Sense sometime. You should put it on Freedom's Phoenix. People should read it again, because Thomas Paine was a blue collar guy. He came here and he adopted and adapted to American culture. If you read Common Sense, it's him basically saying what it means to be an American. That's what it is. And King George didn't understand it. And that's what being an American is. And that is why George Washington made it mandatory that it was read to all of the troops in Valley Forge right on the last day before George Washington was going to lose his troops. A lot of you don't know, the troops all signed up for like a 2-year contract or something. And it was going to end on December 31st. It was going to end on December 31st, whatever year, 17, whatever it was. And it was cold, and they had lost almost every battle. They lost, they were about to lose everything. And George Washington, before he lost all of his troops to go back home, he would rile them up. And he had every single, you know, colonel or whatever, read common sense to all the lines. And right after that, that is when they did the ultimate Hail Mary, and they did the, the crossing of the Delaware, and they did the battle, which is actually
Eve or something.
It was Christmas. It was Christmas Eve. It was Christmas Eve, actually. So yeah, this was a few days before Christmas Eve when he read Common Sense. I apologize. So it's a few days off. But the point is, he was about to lose all of his troops, and he did the Hail Mary after riling them up with Common Sense, and they did the so-called battle. Now, it wasn't a battle. It was actually a massacre, because they waited to Christmas Eve when the British and the Hussian soldiers, who they were soldiers for hire, the British had, because the British couldn't get enough soldiers of their own because they were tired of the war like Vietnam. And so they were all sleeping in their beds after partying and drinking from Christmas Eve festivities, and they went and they slaughtered them all in their tents. And that was the battle that we won. And the American colonists went, woohoo, George Washington's a hero. And that was enough to get another stimulus, so to speak, in the arm of of what America was, and people could see a unification. They could see what American culture was, what these American colonists, these British colonists actually, were becoming. They were becoming something different, but they couldn't put their finger on it because they were in the bubble. It took Thomas Paine, who was a foreigner. He came from, I think it was Ireland. I don't quote me, Ireland, it may have been England, but it was Ireland. And he came to America, and it was an outsider that came here who saw the culture that the people here, like Ernie Hancock, could not see. And that is why that common sense was such a rallying cry. So anyway, I just wanted to put it in perspective of history. And yeah, I guess we do need another common sense. Maybe the original is still good enough. We should talk about it.
I don't know. There's a lot out there. You know, it's... It's common sense is, you know, what it's called. But the so I'm looking for it. I'm putting it up right now while you're talking, you know, common sense. I got a thing they're talking about it, but I need, you know, I need to see it.
I mean, yeah, for those of you, I know I talk, you know, between the Japanese and the medicine and some of the economic part. But I don't know all history, but I'm a real student of the revolutionary history. It's kind of my thing. Some people are in the Civil War. I don't know much about Civil War as much as the Revolution with General Benoit and all. Fantastic to really understand how we got into it and almost everything. If you just change the topics, if you change the names, what we've been seeing happening in this country happened exactly 200 plus years ago in the Revolution. It was the same setup, same dynamics. It seems old-fashioned. It seems like watching a black and white television show in some history book. And it doesn't seem real. But when you understand it, when you put human emotions into the stories of the Revolution, it is the exact same thing. It becomes alive. And you see that these people went through the same trials and tribulations, the same issues with government, the fact that most of the colonists did not fight. 90% of the colonists sat on their own ass and let everyone else do the heavy lifting. So when everyone sits around the 4th of July and waves their flags around and gets their day off so they can get drunk and have hot dogs every 4th of July, keep in mind that 90% of those people who celebrate 4th of July, if patterns hold, would be sitting on their ass as well as the 10% of the ones that did the revolution. It was only 10%. I'm not sitting here on your show calling for revolution for any people listening. I'm just pointing out that it was a minority of only 10% that basically took on the British Empire. And then years later, we had a little bit of help from the French. That's another story. But we did the 10% troublemakers did it. So it's a lot. That's something that I didn't even realize until I studied it. So it was a minority.
I got
now it. We have social media and of course, now we have Twitter mobs and Facebook mobs. So you know, you can get a lot more than 10% probably with social media. That's why they want to shut it down.
Well, this is I'm getting ready to put it up. Here we go.
Yeah, sure. I'm done ranting.
Wait. I gotta have it up before you go, because I do. All right. Put that in. All right, and boom. For those of you that see, I gotta have a category. Rebellion and revolutions, protests and rebellions. What is it? I got revolutions and revolt or something. I got a category here for revolution. I got 15 gazillion. Revolution, rebellions. Revolutions, rebellions, and uprisings. That's a category. So this is, you know, you want to go to the top of the file right now. It gives you a little history on it and a link to the actual text of it. And I'll have Donna put it into the day's archive. And, heck, I can do it here. But then I put it up at the top of the page. Boom. Now, this is whenever they talk about the cause. You watch The Patriot with Mel Gibson and Heath Ledger. They go, oh, the cause. It's a lost cause. You know, it's a whatever cause of or not enough cause. And that is what they were talking about. This is what they were talking about. The cause. What is the cause? Nobody understands what the cause is. So I'm going, God, man, you guys just do murka, you know? So let me go ahead and put this in. What's this, hour two? And boom. And this is why I got Freedom's Phoenix. I'm letting you guys watch how I edit this and put this stuff in there. You know, yada, yada, yada. There it is. Okay. Enter. This is, and this is what we're taking on the road. The power of the site is for other people. This, everything that I have, you're a writer or you a managing editor, you got your own special edition, whatever, you could have your own pages like Facebook. You could have your own Freedom's Phoenix, your own page. We have a bunch, you know, for like our Vaccine Education Summit, you know, Love Bus Liberty Tour, the Second Amendment is for Everyone, a bunch of our Second Amendment stuff, Safe, you know, gunowners.com. All this are special editions. You could have your own. We're going to be emphasizing that as we go around the country, that this tool is for you. Now, what happens is we did that in like 9 and 10. This is like over 10 years ago. It was so popular, it blew out our servers. So we're like, whoa. Okay, that's why Google and YouTube, and they rule the world, because they got to have all these servers and Amazon, the cloud of whatever. Well, that's why we're going to IPFS, is because we become the scalability of this. They don't understand. They have no idea. I already know. I'll sit here and tell you exactly what's going to happen. But they're the architect. They can't figure it out. They don't understand the power of spontaneous order. They'll see things like the, you know, the Ron Paul Levolution blindsided them. They go, we'll just control the internet. Yeah, we'll do that, and then we'll rule again. And I'm going, wow, man, you guys, they don't get it. They can't. They can't understand. It's not in their framework. They don't know the definition. They can't mouth the words. They don't understand. They don't have the empathy. You know, they don't have the understanding. They can't walk through anybody else's shoes. They don't understand your word. That's one thing that Trump does. I think when Trump goes to these rallies, he is energized by the people and the support that he has to keep on the fight. It's just that he's so worried about what the other politicians or the media or something is saying about something, there's some hole in his chest that he can't fill, you know, and it goes back to him wanting to be part of the club with these guys or something. And I'm going, and if he bombs Syria enough, everybody loves him. If he shuts down the economy, CNN says nice things. I'm going, stop. You know, he's not a sociopath, but he's got I don't know, daddy issues or something. I mean, stop. Have some confidence to tell these guys to get bent. And that's where Rand and Massey and all these guys coming in. You go, oh, Massey's just grandstanding. I go, God, thank God somebody stood up and said, no, what you guys are doing is bullshit. Of course you're going to do it, but I'm calling bullshit on it. So, yay, somebody's there calling bullshit. Amen. In my opinion.
Well, I didn't know you had an opinion there, Ernie.
I always got an opinion. Somebody makes a mistake of asking me or challenging me. You know, I'm like, oh. All right, Frank. You know, any last words?
No, thanks for including me. It was nice to talk to James for once. And, I guess this is going to be in flux. So are we going to be – I mean, it doesn't have to be me. I'm sure you have plenty of other guests as well. But just give the audience, like, are you going to be flexible enough to do – remotes or podcasts
yeah.
For the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, when I get back, we're going to be testing out the bus like we did before. So, yeah, we're going to be we're going to be doing shows from back there, at least, you know, enough. I mean, 2, 3, 5, I don't know. But it depends how far along we are on the studio. At some point, you know, there'll be, you know, a day we need to work or something. But, yeah, we're going to try and do – and the whole point of the bus is to be able to make everything that we do here in the studio easier. And it's just, you know, because Donna's always here going around. You know, everything that we've learned of how to do this, like Tim's pimp-ass zooming camera, I'm like, whoa, where the hell has that been, man? I've been looking for that I'm not sparing expense on this stuff. I am not fighting in going around the country being able to, you know, compromising on anything. I want, nope, and we're pimping out everything. So when we come, we're going to be trying to use it as much as possible next week back east, and then on the way back, when we're driving the bus back to Arizona, we'll be doing it. And when we get here, once I start, we've been dismantling a lot of stuff and packing, and one of the last, I just started on the studio today getting a lot of the stuff cleaned out. But once we break this down, we're going to have to use the bus. So we're going to be, get on the bus, forget about them, put the blame on them. Anyway, so we're going to do the bus, okay? So, yeah, it's going to be pimp, and we'll continue our Trump report, you know, however often you can do it, and I look forward to it. You know, it's at the time that the country's not – what are they going to do without the Trump report? I mean, you know, tell me that. Damn it. You know?
I don't know, but we'll see. Well, it's a pleasure chatting with you. I will talk to you next. So let me know when next you want to do it, and peace out.
Yeah, no, we're trying next Tuesday. I look forward to do it. You know, people are looking for me. They don't get them Trump report. They're not digging it. I get emails. What's up? You know, so you know, where's Dr. Frank, man? He's the only one that yells at Ernie. I like it. So you know.
All right. We'll definitely get through this. I'm sure there'll be some news by next time.
Good God, I'm. Peace, brother. Love you. Bye.
All right. Wait.